Right, we got Neil Delamere. I think we'll have another wee... oh, yes, going through red lights.
He goes, you know how many red lights you broke? 7 red lights. What about the one at Royal Mile in South Bridge? That's a dangerous junction. And I did what any Irish person does abroad. You think, well, if he knows I'm Irish and foreign, I might get away with this. So I looked at him and went, Begar be jizz be the hokey. I don't know where that is. A fiddly diddly diddly dee. And river dance slightly away from the bicycle. He heard the accent and he went, ah, oh, would you cycle through a red light at home, would you? And I went, no, I've got a car at home.
Right, hiya Neil.
I'm very well, how are you?
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. You're out and about. What are you doing now? Because I know we see you on TV and all kinds of things, and then you do stuff on your own. And then the last time I saw you, you weren't working. You were on a pub crawl with Tim McGarry, Jake O'Kane, Jackie Hamilton and all the other funny people.
Yeah, we're back doing the blame game, actually. It's going to be back on this Saturday. And it's brilliant going out with Tim McGarry because Jake O'Kane calls him the lightning rod because he's so tall. We just send him out in front of us.
Yeah.
And he attracts all the attention.
That's right. Da!
No. And you walk around and you see English people having no idea because of the Da reference.
Yeah.
And people from the Republic as well. So they just think that this man is the father of... maybe donates lots of sperm to banks or something like this, but that's the last time I was up. But at the moment I'm just kind of touring around, and I've just finished a topical show for RTE, and I'm doing 4 more history documentaries. I do kind of history documentaries as well, comedy history documentaries.
I know, so you did that. There's something about Patrick, dealing with St. Patrick.
Yeah, dealing with St. Patrick. I went up to Downpatrick and went to Armagh as well and learned loads, and it's great crack as well.
You're like, a gag. You just run around and interview and then get paid for it.
That's essentially it. Get grant money from here, there, yeah, and everywhere. And we were over in Downpatrick, which is great crack. Armagh was great crack. I always thought, and you learn things that you kind of thought. Or you learn kind of to dispel myths, like Patrick was always associated with Armagh, right? Even though he never mentions Armagh in any of his writings. What happened was later sources associated him, a really famous person, with Armagh to enhance the reputation of their town. And I was kind of appalled by this until I remembered that I was from County Offaly, home of Barack Obama, President of the United States of America.
So you have a brass neck, really.
Brass neck. Everything comes around again. That's one of the big things you learn from these.
So that was as cynical as that? Fame by association here.
Yeah. History's always as cynical as that, you know. In every single part of Ireland, in every single part of the UK, in every single part of the world, you know.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah, I mean, I'm reading again. This is probably put together by your people.
Of course.
My people. In the interest of research for the programme, did you walk up Croke Patrick barefoot?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you?
Not all the way now.
Yeah, but did you
do it? We just moved the camera further and further away. As part of the show, yeah, we did this. And when I made this show, the producers, they tell me 95%, and we discuss 95% of what's going to happen. They always keep one thing. And what they kept back on this is, I said one thing, no snakes.
All right.
It's completely irrelevant to the story, it's a myth, don't do it. Halfway up, Croke Patrick, Billy, who's the historical expert on the show, just draped a snake around my shoulders.
Whoa.
And I kind of slightly freaked out. And all the researchers behind the camera going, he's great, he's really friendly. I don't care if he's on Facebook, get him off my shoulders.
You were like Harrison Ford then with the snakes, Indiana Jones.
Yeah. I wasn't particularly happy. And at one point, he could just feel his head just beside my ear, and then I felt this kind of lick, and I was looking in the opposite direction because I couldn't look at the snake, and all I could think was, jeez, I really hope that's Billy. I really hope that is Billy licking my ear. I want to turn around. I don't want to see a snake's head like a Siamese twin. I want to look around and see Billy in the nip, having staked it all in a fairly risky homosexual proposition.
That's that's bad of them now. If you've already said, listen, snakes are off the menu here.
It makes good telly, though, you know.
Yeah, well,
fear
so.
Makes good telly, I suppose.
You'll be getting, that commission for more shows like that.
Yeah.
And the writer will be, make him do something he hits.
Well, we'll be back. Yeah, we'll be back up now. We're doing, we'll be up kind of in Tyrone and Donegal, because we're going to do probably Reggie O'Donnell and Hugh O'Neill. And we'll do Grow on Your Whale. We'll do Cucullin, Defender of Ulster. And we'll do one other one, maybe Sean McCool.
Are you doing Cucullin?
Next four,
because he is the most... let's say in Northern Ireland, fought over personality. Everybody lays claim to him,
but ironically, unifying really.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
yes.
I've seen murals in parts of Belfast you wouldn't expect to see murals of Cucullin,
but he's one of the few figures that can be mentioned, and everybody will go, yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, he's one of ours.
Good guy.
Yeah.
But he's not one of yours, he's one of ours.
He's a mythical, exactly. Yeah. Let everybody fight over him equally.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm sure that's exactly what he would want, given that he was a warrior. So
yeah, my surname's Cullen. So he was Cullen's hound.
Yes.
So we're the, You know, my granddad used to try and tell us, well, you're named after Cullen, but we're named after Cullen, the guy who's
a blacksmith.
Whose dog he killed.
Yeah, you've a touch of the foundry about you. You look like you could make wrought iron with those hands now. I don't know, I just think...
Good lad, that's a compliment I didn't think I was going to get today. I'm hoping it was a compliment.
It was, of course.
So, again, it's a thing when you're speaking to people who make their living in comedy.
Yeah.
What made you do it? Because you do have to be a bit...
mental.
It's a bit like anybody who wants to be a goalkeeper or a drummer or comedian.
They're a little bit off the wall. Yeah. No, I wholeheartedly accept that. Yeah. You weren't hugged enough as a child. I think. Yeah. Why else would you want the affection and approval of 400 strangers in a room? I think there's just degrees of it. Well, I had no intention of doing it. I grew up in a small town. There was no outlet for this. I wasn't even really aware of it because there was no theatre or anything. Mm-hmm. So I started watching. And towards the end of the kind of 1990s, as I was in school and beginning to go to college, Tommy Tiernan and Ardal O'Hanlon both presented the BBC stand-up show. Mm-hmm. Which was on about kind of 12 o'clock at night on BBC One, and it was pure stand-up. And remember, there wasn't all that. There wasn't Paramount and there wasn't Live at the Apollo and all the rest. So this was your only exposure to it. And suddenly there was two Irish guys presenting it. I kind of thought, that's interesting. And then when I went to college, I actually saw people live coming to the gigs, coming to the college, you know. Ironically, the gigs that I would do now as the comedian. So Dara Breen came and then I kind of went, oh, this is interesting. And I just decided to do it once. I only wanted to do it once and did it once and kind of got the bug, and that was it, really.
Were you not scared?
Terrified. I mean, really? Absolutely terrified. People say to you, what was your first gig like? No idea. I have absolutely no idea. All I can tell you is I knew that script forwards, backwards, sideways. An earthquake could have hit in that club and I would have continued that set with the wreckage falling around me, you know?
Yeah.
All you got to do is you're terrible at the start. Terrible. Now, some people would probably consider you terrible still after 10 or 15 years, but you hope that the first few gigs are fun and good enough so that eventually when you have one that is horrible, that you've enough good ones in the bank that it kind of has built up the goodwill in your brain, really, you know?
Have you ever had any real tumbleweed ones where you're like, these people aren't going for this at all?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, God, yeah. Any comedian who says he hasn't died is lying. I did a gig once in Mountjoy Prison.
Right.
In Dublin, and... the guy on before me, the guy who organised, used to be in the prison, and he walked on. He was hosting, and he was heckled by his former cellmate. Was the first thing that happened.
Whoa, tough gig.
Yeah, tough gig. Yeah, and it's tough when you're doing a prison gig. Like, how do you can't really MC it. Like, you go, hey, so any couples in? Don't answer that question. Anybody anywhere nice on their holidays? Don't answer that question. Any students in? Okay, this isn't going that well. You know, you don't do travel stories either, generally. Yeah. And but there was a guy on who was the first act on, and the first couple of rows were empty, and he stopped halfway through and he asked the guy, and the guy was maybe three rows back, and he said, why are those chairs empty? And the guy looked up from a copy of the newspaper. He wasn't even listening. He just looked up from the newspaper and went, those chairs are for the riot, and put his head back down again. And we all just panicked unbelievably. But that was kind of one of the weirder gigs I've done, I say.
That is, and I suppose you can't even say, well, it was in this restaurant last night. You can't, you know, rub it in. I was out having a great time.
Yeah, I was in the canteen. But it was good crack, though, because there was an atmosphere there. All you had to do was harness it. It's the ones where there's, you know, particularly in your early days when you're not doing theatres and you're touring around where everybody's there, you know, and it's a conducive atmosphere to comedy. You know, you're standing up in the Champions League above your head and you're on a bar pallet or something like that. I did a gig once in rural Armagh, and I walked in, and it was in a pub, and I walked in and they'd won a competition to have comedy, and it was great crack. But your man goes, we said, is there anywhere we can hang around before the gig? And he goes, go into the kitchen there. Went into the kitchen, it was a coffin.
What?
On the table. And I walked in and he just went, don't look in that.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's all he said, yeah. Me and my mate are just sitting there in someone's kitchen drinking tea.
And then we have to go out and,
Right.
What I was going to say to you, when you first started to get your break, was it easier to play to a home crowd or total strangers?
What do you mean by home?
People who knew you. Are they all going, I know you. You're not talented. I've known you all your life.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
Because you have to be spectacularly special, you know, for...
Yeah, I don't think I'd ever do this. I don't think anybody...
Because you're still the wee lad down the street to them, you know?
Yeah, everybody on this island, I think, is like that. Is you'd be kind of slightly wary of playing your own home place, but... It's much easier when people know who you are in terms of when you do television or you do radio, and then they know what they're getting, you know. And I've been lucky enough to do stuff that's... See, panel shows are brilliant because panel shows are almost like a trailer for what your stand-up will be. Because if you do kind of sketch shows, people might watch that and go, I wonder what he's going to do when I go and see him in the Ulster Hall.
Yeah.
Whereas if you do the Blame Game, they go, he's going to do an hour and 20 minutes of that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's a good teaser, if you know what I mean.
What's it like on the panel shows? Are you constantly trying to score more points than your mates? I mean, you know, these guys, you're trying to be, I'm going to be funnier than Tim tonight, or... Is there that sense of being competitive?
When you're about 25, maybe it is, but then it settles down into, we've been around for a while now. The Blame Game's been on since 2004 or 5, you know, and the panel started in 2003, and that went to about 2011. So you know what happens is you fall into the other's rhythms, and it's like a football match. You kind of know when someone's off on a solo run, like Murphy goes off on a solo run.
Yeah.
And, you can see when he's digging himself into a blind alley, and you let him.
Let him.
We all go, good luck with this one now, and they'll do the same to me. So you kind of learn how to play with each other, if you know what I mean, in a football sense, but also in a rhythm sense. And I think we all. Hopefully it settles down so you bring different things to it, really, you know.
Aye.
And in the back of it all, try to be the funniest one, yeah.
Oh, well, this is it.
I was going to deny it, but
no,
yeah,
you do want to sort of finish a show like that and have the audience thinking, well, they were all brilliant, except for him.
I don't like that fella. He must get really a grant for the Southerner, yeah. But it's great because if you just do stand-up, like I tour around and we'll do 50 or 60 dates and it's me and the support act. So you kind of miss when you're in an office or if you're in a school or if you're in a kind of collegiate atmosphere. But a Blame Game, bring that back. It's crack. It's really good fun to do.
Yeah.
You know, because you're meeting your mates again.
I suppose if you're all sitting having a bit of crack, and as I say, I pointed out, you were all out for a drink together at Christmas, you know, Christmas do.
Yeah.
If something happens when you're out, who's the first one to, I'm going to use that in my show, don't you use it? You know, it's like situations will come up and you're obviously like a sponge, you have to soak everything in,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I suppose there's kind of an unwritten rule, I think, on those nights that we just don't talk shop and don't do anything like that, you know? you just have the crack in those nights out.
Far too civilised.
Oh, no, or
I'd be recording every second of it.
Yeah, well, we can't remember anything the next day. Yeah. Is probably
well,
the main
that's
thing.
The kind of state I saw you all in being helped out of the Europa.
Except Jake O'Kane, who is a fine, upstanding citizen, I have to say.
Oh no, good guy. So listen, you're in the Down Arts Centre.
I am, yeah. I mean, Cook's down tomorrow night, but it's sold out, and I did the Ulster Hall last week and then Enniskillen and all the rest. So we've only got two left, which is two left.
I know Sunday 2nd of March, Down Arts Centre.
That's Sunday, yeah.
And what's the other one?
Cookstown is tomorrow night, but I think
it's sold out.
That's gone, yeah.
Good to be able to say that, isn't it?
It's good, yeah. And the Ulster Hall was sold out, and then Enniskillen was sold out. And I'm playing every single county on the island. So, I'm kind of almost halfway through. No, I'm more than halfway through, yeah. So,
wouldn't like your petrol bill?
No.
No.
So I cycle
through red lights.
Yeah,
the show's called Smart Bomb.
Yes,
was that Waze in Northern Ireland context, putting bomb in the title?
You know, somebody did say that to me quite recently. What happens is you call your show something in kind of March or April because you have to do the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in August, and you call it something.
Yeah,
what it's like trying to name a child before you know what sex the child is. So actually, the show is about people I've fallen out with over the last year. So that's really what it's about. You know, people I've kind of had run-ins with. So. Smart Bomb is a bit of a misnomer, but don't tell anybody.
Okay, well listen, Neil, thanks for coming in, folks. 2nd of March, Down Arts Centre, Smart Bomb. I think there are still a couple of tickets left, so get down there. Neil, thanks, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.